I'm someone who loves trying out different makeup looks, but doesn't really wear much on a daily basis, so I like to focus on making sure I have high quality staples. And whether you like a fresh face, full glam, or somewhere in between, you've probably seen Thrive Cosmetics Viral Tubing Mascara. I've certainly seen it everywhere. You know, the one in the turquoise tube? So that mascara, along with all of Thrive Cosmetics' beauty products, are certified 100% vegan and cruelty-free, which I look for in makeup, and they've got excellent quality to match. And something I didn't know from all the mascara videos I've seen is that for every product sold, Thrive Cosmetics donates either that same product, another product that is needed more, or a monetary donation. They've worked with over 500 nonprofits to help with a wide range of causes like supporting cancer survivors, people experiencing homelessness, education access, and so much more. Knowing that makes me feel even better about using their products. And I do enjoy using them. Like I said, I like having high quality staples, and so my favorites are products that are multi-purpose, like the Brilliant Eye Brightener. It comes in a bunch of colors, and I like using them as eyeliner, eyeshadow, and even highlighter. Thrive Cosmetics is luxury beauty that gives back. Right now, you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/thrive. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS, .com/thrive for 20% off your first order. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales, because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel, one by one, spoiler-free, and in tandem with no one. Everything has changed. We're all alone. And the truth is out there or something. I'm your co-host, LaToya Ferguson, a.k.a. the She's Dead But You Wouldn't Know From Watching This Show Now Chase of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. one half of the Gun Squad, who's alive but you also wouldn't know from watching this show now, a.k.a. the Gilbert to Morgan Sullivan, a.k.a. Daddy, even if no one can remember that, a.k.a. Captain Forehead, sir, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And I'm your co-host, Morgan Ludich, a.k.a. the Winifred Burkle of the Buffering Verse, a.k.a. half of the Gun Squad. Pow, pow. Who is he anymore? I don't know. A.k.a. the Sullivan to LaToya's Gilbert, a.k.a. remembering Daddy, a.k.a. William Bloody, a.k.a. even more annoying new nicknames to come.
And this week, we're watching Angel Season 5, Episode 13, Why We Fight. Why We Fight was written by Stephen S. DeKnight and Drew Goddard and directed by Terrence O'Hara. It aired on the WB on February 11, 2004, which means they basically did a D-Day episode for their V-Day episode.
Such a better summary than what I've got here. And this is the one where Angel's experiences on a stolen U-boat from World War II come back to haunt him in the form of the vampire he sired there, returning for his revenge!
All right. Another one. And when I say another one, I mean another Stephen S. DeKnight, Drew Goddard collaboration. Morgan, we have to unpack this. And I guess without spoiling, because this is the second of three this season, I will just say the third one, the third collaboration, with the first being Damage. The third is The Girl in Question, which I will say is the episode I was implying when I say it's one people think I like, but don't, other than the cautionary tale and Numero Cinco. I don't like that episode. So as far as I'm concerned, these two very heavy hitters are 0-for-3 this season. And it's interesting to watch, to look at their solo episodes and their other collaborations, because I would say they are much better episodes than the three they have together.
Yeah. It really does seem like, and I know we talked about this before, and like there is only a limited amount of value in like speculating about why these two were on episodes together. But it, to me, it really does seem like these were two people always having to write something that was due yesterday. I gotta say, this was not my favorite, unfortunately. And it sucks because I love their work individually.
Well, considering the cast focus, or actually lack of cast focus in all three of these episodes, because in this episode, you would think that the entire ensemble is directing the next rest of the series, the way that they are in this episode and not in this episode. Although I will say it was smart writing continuity with Lorne having left, because he is the one that if his head's chopped off, it wouldn't have done anything.
I gotta say, it felt like Jay, Amy, and Alexis were all hosting SNL this week.
Look at it, so DeKnight wrote Hellbound by himself, and Goddard wrote Lineage, which are both better season 5 episodes, even with the season 5 problems. And DeKnight also wrote Destiny with David Fury, which is so much better. And for whatever reason, Goddard and DeKnight together, maybe their sensibilities as writers don't work. Because remember, Goddard was showrunner on Daredevil, and he left, and then DeKnight came in. There was no overlap on them actually working together on the show.
There was none, but I do think like they're from what like I was able to see, and what any of us can tell from, you know, being on the outside of the process, their sensibilities like gelled really nicely together. But like I said, you know, the second there was like someone getting their head smashed in a car door repeatedly, like a watermelon exploding, I knew that Steve DeKnight was in charge. So like they both have their own things. Like Goddard is very like I think a lot goofier than DeKnight, but obviously like really, really earnest, I think, too, and a really great writer. And DeKnight is kind of like a little bit more bombastic and like kind of genre driven, I would say. Like, he's best when he's like leading into something really hard. And I love both of them. So, yeah, it's just kind of bizarre that they are two great tastes that don't taste great together, it seems. Yeah, but also, I just wonder, I think this is way, way too much for a 45-minute episode of television, and I think that they were kind of set up to fail here.
Especially for, like, an episodic piece, because that's what this is, but it's also trying to add a mythology we definitely did not need for Angel or Spike. I mean, Spike is very superfluous, but we'll talk about that. But for Angel, we really didn't need this coloring for him, I don't think. And there are things, there are aspects that we'll talk more about, which I think could have worked in a different context, a different episode context. Really, watching this, I'm like, the only way this episode could have worked in terms of setting is had it been a Western episode.
That's just because you're such a big fan of the Legacies Western episode.
it's just a real dad energy that you don't want on your Angel when it's not like father Angel. It's completely different. It's also, I was watching the episode promo for this one, and you know, it got the classic WB like Angel subtitle. So it was Angel 1943. And they were showing World War II footage for this promo for a WB series. Teenage girls like such as myself were watching this.
And you say it was canceled this very year?
It was canceled in just a few short days.
Yeah, unfortunately, that'll do it. I mean, you know, like hindsight's 2020, but geez.
To be fair, like it wasn't canceled because of the ratings or stuff like that. And also, like, the promo is absurd because, as we know, we talk a lot about how the promo department doesn't necessarily reflect what the show is trying to present. There's. Oh, let me find the direct quote because it's going to make your head spin.
Oh, great.
Yes, the voiceover for this promo trailer calls Spike Hitler's greatest secret weapon. And it's part of the promotional stuff. Angel going, Spike, you're a Nazi? And I just wrote in my notes, you guys like this shit?
No. And I mean,
it's not the show's fault that the network presented it as such.
But yes.
It is the show's fault that in its desire to remind people that Spike loves to steal a jacket, he had to steal the Nazi jacket.
Yeah, that, like, I gotta say, like, not only that bit, but pretty much all of the bits in this episode fell super flat for me. And I think that's hard. There's nothing worse than watching like comedy that bombs for you repeatedly. Like, you know you're supposed to be laughing and you're not, and that's happening a lot this episode. But yeah,
let's see. I was reading a review about this and there were things I agreed with it about. It overall didn't like this episode. It liked the concept of this episode, but there were some things I obviously disagree with. One thing was that it was talking about how season four main failings was that it was basically a 22-part story, and that was a big factor in season five's popularity. To again, I say, that was never a failing of season four for me. I thought it was a brilliant undertaking, even with my problems with season four. Like, and I say the same thing about Alias season three, which had a bunch of network interference that led to issues in terms of like cutting stories short and making conclusions that made little sense because they didn't want the show to get too dark. And they, again, like season five of Angel, they wanted season four of Alias to be episodic, lighter, all that stuff. We're currently... the lead in for this season is the season of Smallville with the dark serialized season, which isn't even as serialized as either the Angel or Alias season that leads to the more episodic fun season four. Like this was definitely a thing around this time, which is unfortunate just because like these were like influential shows. It's like, but the things that they're like, but the networks at the time were like, we don't like that. We like the normal TV. Like, and that's why networks are severely behind nowadays.
Yeah, definitely something we're still seeing now.
Yeah, and I just, I personally still find the season, like, having to serve a bunch of masters I don't appreciate, a problem. Like, again, the network interference to make this episodic, which means we have this episode, which, again, has some good concepts, but... is not the episode that should have aired at the 100th, which I will get into that too. Like, again, the season I found is like fan service to a fan base that doesn't even like the show. Like, again, I like Angel the character. I like this ensemble. Like, and this is uncharitable, and I go into it a little further in my notes. But like, Spike feels so much. He serves the purpose of a character like Cousin Oliver on the Brady Bunch. I'm not saying that Spike is a Cousin Oliver. He's a much better character, like a much more well-rounded character, at least outside of the season of television. But it's like, you know, when a show would cast like a cool young kid, like Leonardo DiCaprio in Growing Pains. He's like, he's the shiny new toy they dangle to bring in like viewers. But the show was still canceled, like essentially. So it didn't work. And it just kind of, you have a whole episode where... Our ensemble is bound and gagged, and then you end it with, again, Spike kind of shoehorned in for a beautiful shot to end the episode, but it's just like, we keep having these heart-to-heart moments between Spike and Angel. I'm like, but what about the ensemble?
Yeah, what about the people I've been watching for years on this show that suddenly the people behind the scenes just don't seem compelled by, and therefore like all of these characters have gotten a huge reboot. Gun and the Law, Fred and her miniskirts, Wes returning to, you know, season to Wes. It's just, it just kind of bums me out as a fan, which I know we've said a lot. So are there any other macro thoughts before we scoot?
Yeah. I know Scooby brought it up in the Discord. I apologize for, I didn't do my research and look up who it was. But they brought up the fact that this episode takes place literally a week after You're Welcome. Like, it's there's not like a little break in between. It's the next episode. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely zero fallout or aftermath of the fact that Cordelia is dead. They mentioned the Eve crap and Lindsay. Nothing about Cordelia. And there's some... like, without spoiling, there's some eventual aftermath in the season they're not acknowledging for a reason, but, like, still, like, nothing. Not even a breadcrumb. Not even any knowledge of how the rest of Angel Investigations, like, reacted to this. And this is, to compare it to Smallville again, this is like in season four of Smallville where Clark's girlfriend Alicia dies. I told you about this death. Mm-hmm. She was the one who was hanged, like, the really grotesque, like, death on the show. Mm-hmm. And, like... the next episode, again, no break, is all about after like the episode where she dies and he's like absolutely heartbroken and depressed about it. The next episode, the following week, is all about his college football aspirations. It's all and they're being dashed. Now he can't play football again because, you know, he has special abilities. And it ends with Simple Plans Untitled because that's classic. The era. Two episodes after they played Welcome to My Life, right before he and Alicia are about to have premarital sex.
Oh, well, see, that's why she died.
That is why.
Gravy.
And because she and Clark were way too hot for that show.
Fair enough.
So someone had to die, and he's Superman, so.
Yeah, he is kind of the main guy. Yeah, it's just, you're right, like, the network interference, like, I do think it's a weird time for media, and, like, when you see a show go through this many, like, shifts and kind of like people seeming to feel that it needed to be retooled, you can come out with something that doesn't look quite right.
I just think in terms of retooling, like, I get it if you didn't like the way season four's like story was told, like structurally, then to me it would make sense to just go back to the way it was told, like season three, or if you wanted like still one more episodic, like season two, like to completely in a like fuck around with it is wild to me.
I agree. And I just, I agree. And I think this episode, like, it's introducing a kind of episode that could exist on The New Angel, which would be, like, the flashback episode. Not that they haven't done that before on the show, but I think, like, this kind of, like, Wolfram and Hart era of the show, like a zippy old serial with Angel and even Spike at the center of it. Like, I think it would be cool for them to genre hop and do stuff like that. But this just, like, one, I think the submarine movie is, at least it's not a genre that I'm super familiar with. And or am super compelled by. And two, I again just think this is like so overstuffed. The idea of like introducing this whole secret government organization that existed, why not just have Wolfram and Hart be doing this? Saying we're a local group with interest. And we're
doing
this.
At least we know they're successful, unlike the initiative.
Yeah, we know.
Let the dream die, Joss. This is our second initiative mention of the season. Let it die. Why would you keep bringing up something that's considered a flop?
He is quite determined for the government conspiracy to work. And he honestly was more on the money with the Steve Rogers talk. So.
Oh, brother, they want to do this, you know, this zippy 1940s genre thing. They didn't think about at all having the dialogue match the era. They didn't try at all.
There are attempts. Like at one point, someone calls someone an eight ball.
But like, there's like, let me find the list of anachronisms in terms of the dialogue.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah, there are anachronistic phrases like back in the day, hold it together, don't lose your cool. A joke that assumes everyone is familiar with a melon baller.
Yes, the melon balling one. I was like, does the melon baller exist yet? I mean, not that I think it's a particularly modern invention.
I believe it exists, but like not everyone would know about it. Maybe rich people.
Yeah.
Also, what's very funny about this episode is this is Alexis Denisov's 100th appearance as Wesley.
Congrats, man.
Gave him a lot to work with.
Woof. Well, he looked good standing on that chair.
Okay, let me see. Just making sure there's anything else I need to. Oh, I have to issue a formal apology. We did not play the Bye for Boreanaz jingle during the 100th when it came to Lindsay and honestly Cordelia and us, because we were truly too distracted by Christian Kane's glistening upper body to think straight. Even when we played a bunch of jingles in the process. So please, Kristen, hit the theme.
He's got a booty stare and hot spiky hair. If you're straight or gay, your tingly feelings don't care. You're just being honest about this sexy demonic in your Bye for Boreanaz. Bye for Boreanaz.
Also, the Hulu image for this episode is literally a gagged Fred, because we cannot have a moment's peace.
Have a moment of peace. Mm-hmm. We open in the Atlantic Ocean, 1943. We're on board a submarine and everything is all fucked. Carnage is ripping through the thing and the camera's just ahead of the action. We see the captain get all, you know, messed up by something we can't see. And someone, our kind of like submarine protagonist, Sam Lawson, tries to save him and fails.
And we know it, and we, the audience, know it's vampires because we know those sounds and movements anywhere, honestly.
You know, kind of, you're familiar with it by now. Then we cut to Angel's big conference table in his office, and they're talking about Eve's gone.
She's vanished.
None of them are saying, like, cool, good.
Like, the senior partners don't take betrayal lightly. Okay. Fair enough. Lorne assumes they sucked her up, too, which, great.
Yeah.
And then Wes says Eve left swearing vengeance, to which I'm like, wait, really? To which I had to, like, look back at the transcript. Okay, so the transcript even includes that she's pouting on her way out, which, okay. So Eve says, and here I am thinking revenge. Angel says, and what do you imagine the senior partners are thinking? Then the elevator's doors close on Eve, clearly, like, she clearly knows she's fucked. So, like, was that really a threat of vengeance? It more seems like a baby was pouting.
Mm-hmm. Well, Wes is a dweeb now, so I guess he's just scared of any old tiny girl these days.
Yeah, and Angel wants concrete intel on Lindsay, but Gunn says the white room's empty. Okay, and they have no liaison because Eve, again, vanished. So, Gunn's having an issue. Remember the word protocol.
Gunn stumbles over his words, and it's like, Matrix is glitching, and so I get hope rising up in my soul that I might see my beautiful boy.
glitch. There is no mention of Cordy and no social lives for these people.
Yeah, they mention, oh, it's Friday at midnight and we're done. We're early, but all of them still have individual shit to do, including Fred, who's fixing a fuck up from Knox.
Great. I love Wes saying, yes, he is unreliable. Good point. But I also wrote, shut up, cuck. If you're not going to do anything about it, shut up. But also, Fred said she has to redo the entire Trask experiment, to which I say, like Oliver Trask? Then I realize this episode's going against the episode of OC where Oliver holds Marissa hostage. Perfect synergy.
Oh my God. Yes. Oh my God, I wish Oliver was in this I wish Angel and Spike had to fight Oliver. Like, I mean, they'd lose, but I would love to see it. So I note in this in my notes that Lauren's suit is like so silvery and patterned and shiny, I could not stop staring at it. Angel does ask in a very kind of adorable way if everyone wants to hang out in a couple more hours and talk about work more, and I'm like, are you admitting that you like being around people? Who's this?
Only these people.
Made me happy.
Maybe he feels this way because of he was just with Cordelia, but wouldn't know.
So as they're leaving, Fred says, what did we do before we had these jobs? And Wes says, I seem to recall lots and lots of Jenga.
So that's what they put in their brains.
I wrote in my notes in all caps, let me see them play Jenga, you cowards. Let me see the Jenga.
I suppose it's pretty poetic considering the way they had to mess around with their minds. It was kind of like Jenga.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of empty spaces in their brains.
And all of it's going to topple down any second.
Mm-hmm.
So then later, a gentleman arrives at Wolfram and Hart, and it's Sam from the boat from 1943. But how?
Well, you know he's evil because he's smiling while he's in Wolfram and Hart.
Yeah. Cut to titles. Back from titles. We are in Fred's lab. Fred sees Sam Lawson from the past looking at her files.
And this is where I'm like, really, it begins. This man is a Parker Abrams wannabe. It's the eyebrows. Mm-hmm. But he also looks like Christopher Gorham from Ugly Betty and Popular. So he's like a mix of the two of them. So it's distracting.
Fully see that, and he is like pretty to look at because those two people are pretty to look at, but
I don't find him menacing.
Yeah, there's really no menace there. I think like they kind of tried to get someone who could play two things and kind of couldn't play either that well. Like
I do have a suggestion for this for him that we'll talk about later in the episode. Okay. But I also did at one point think like he's just doing Michael Weston from 6 Feet Under. But also this actually happened, like this aired before then. That wouldn't be till July 2004. So I'm like, he's already doing a poor man's Michael Weston, and Michael Weston hasn't even done it yet.
It's all fallen a little flat. Like, I was unclear about how he was supposed to come across at first because it was falling a little flat. And I'm like, technically the things he's saying are creepy, but I'm not scared.
The music's telling you it's creepy.
Yeah, so Fred is freaked out because, you know, there's a man suddenly in her lab alone with her late at night. But he's like, I'm just here to talk. Do you like working here? Do you enjoy what you do? And Fred kind of tries to like stealthily run away. And Sam's like, if you run, I'll have to stop you. Menace.
Yeah, he was a friend of an old acquaintance of Angel back in his Patriot phase. Time for our first flashback. Ooh. I feel like Jill Dayfield watching these flashbacks.
Don't you just... I usually love a flashback. I love seeing everyone in their little outfits. But this,
I feel like this is right now is the worst time to do a flashback on the show. Because it has no, like, other than, you know, needing a purpose and a reason, which is a big part of Angel in general. Like, there's no actual bearing to the full picture, unlike in Destiny with those flashbacks. And also, besides, like, his final scene, you don't want to do a flashback that's so modern because we can see Borat is an actor who looks good but has very much aged, at least with the wig, something to distract us.
Yeah. It's just not working. Angel, we see Angel, he's sad and he's in his 1940s apartment. He's listening to the radio and he's surrounded by newspapers.
This punk just brooding alone in his apartment. That's what I wrote.
Like, Jesus. And then guys with stakes and crossbows barge in. And Angel seems unfazed. I wondered if this scene used to be longer or used to be preceded by another scene. The information that's given just is very fast. A dude tells them they need able-bodied men because they're losing so many to, you know, the U-boats. And he's in a bunch of military garb, so we know he's talking about World War II. He says, you know, we haven't been able to figure out how these U-boats worked. Yesterday, my men captured a prototype T-class submarine. And then the day after, we received fragments of a distress call telling us something was on the ship. And you could hear dying men screaming for their lives. He explains that the sub is stuck in hostile territory, too deep to be reached by divers. But... you know, who wouldn't have a problem swimming very deep down and, you know, like not getting crushed? A vampire.
Are we sure?
I'm not sure, but I also just like right away they are asking you to believe that the U.S. government knows about vampires and Angel knows they know and doesn't care if they come into his house and start punching him in the face. And I'm not quite on board.
Well, he doesn't care about anything. And I guess, yeah, the initiative had to start somewhere, possibly off the show and not be mentioned on the show at all, let alone twice in this season.
Look, I'd love that. But, you know, these guys call him Angelus. He corrects him. They know he has a soul now. Like, that's how much intel these people have. They're from the Demon Research Initiative. Angel doesn't want to help, but they punch him and stuff. So what's he going to do?
They do the old cliche meathead going for the gut punch.
Mm-hmm.
What are you, Bradley Cooper and Wedding Crashers?
I wish someone in this movie was attacking their role with the verve with which Bradley Cooper attacked his role in Wedding Crashers. Say what you want about that movie, but that man is showing up to work.
Sorry, this man, he was busy with Jack and Bobby at the time, okay?
He was absolutely killing. So they say, Angel, they show him the cargo manifest and what is on the ship. And they say, they think, you know, we think we know what attacked our boys. And they give him Angel sees this before, he doesn't care. But whatever he sees on this list, it makes it his expression harden. And now he knows what he has to do. Can I say something embarrassing?
Always.
I, upon watching this the first time, did not get that he knew Spike would be on the boat. Did not get it at all. And was like, what's on the, like, I was like, I was like, well, he needs to get the boat. I'm sure there's something on the
boat. I mean, it was Hitler's best kept secret.
That's why you gotta watch it twice, I guess.
Was that when you were very high? I did.
It is not. I unfortunately have watched this episode 2 times stone cold sober because I care about the Scoobies. We then cut to the submarine barracks.
We're still in flashback. That's 75% being charitable, 75% of this episode is flashback.
Yeah, I'd say like 90.
Yeah.
Really,
the rest of the cast was directing the rest of the series.
Yeah, I just, like, I mean, obviously there's no reason they could be in the 40s, but I just, and there's no room in what they're trying to do. We already said this episode is overstuffed.
They could have streamlined this episode.
I really feel that they could have. Open on the submarine. Well, actually, Angel coming out of the thing in the submarine.
Yeah.
That could be the beginning of the plot line.
Yeah, now it's just like, oh, like, Denight and Goddard had to, like, stretch to fill the plot of this.
Yeah.
But also, in terms of streamlining, I was thinking about how you talking, you do to me, with like, they make their new versions of, like, the U2 albums, where they like, streamline them and take out, like, the filler that they think don't need to be in there, or, like, rearrange. I'm like, take this episode out. That'd be my first order of business.
For season 5, fair enough.
Take out Unleashed, remove all mentions of Nina.
Fair. Nina? What about Nina's niece, though? Would you keep Nina's niece?
Just a little child, Nina? In the back of a Wolfram Heart going, Nina?
Nina, I'm on the submarine. I'm going up the stairs.
I don't hear you.
You can't hear me?
Wow, you went really high. to be the blonde niece. You went so high I couldn't hear that shit.
Look,
the microphone definitely picked it up and like recorded, but like I didn't hear it.
I have a beautiful soprano. Anyways, we've got Sam. He's with his guys. You know, there's a soft one and other ones have other characteristics.
There's the one who's the older brother from Even Stevens, the one who's not Shia or Christy. He's a fucking coward. Mm-hmm. There's fucking Mikey Day.
That's Mikey Day.
Mikey Day in all his twink glory is one of them. Yeah.
Congrats.
I didn't notice him in this scene, but I noticed him in a later scene. And I'm like, that's fucking Mikey Day.
It's hilarious. And there's also a Nazi. Who they've got on there. They say they can't control the ship from here in the barracks, where they have huddled up to avoid whatever is on the boat killing them. They have 2 days of air left, assuming whatever attacked them can't get through the doors. The Nazi isn't speaking up about what's going on. They're trying to get him to. He won't. Mm-hmm. They hear one of their buddies screaming, and there's like a big gun standoff.
I feel like it's just not suspenseful or thrilling. It's just a low budget for what this is, submarine drama, which is, again, which is a thing for dads. Not for the demographic you were directing this toward on the WB.
Yeah. Do you, I did mean to ask you, LaToya, do you have any submarine fiction that you like? Like submarine, any submarine stuff? Fiction?
Besides Subway, no.
I like the pilot for Last Resort. It's kind of, it's a pretty dad-like genre. But like, Angel's a dad. Like, he's an old man, so technically
he's not dad right now.
True. Goodbye, Connor. So
you miss him, don't you? You're missing him now. Missing him in his milk.
Miss him in his milk and his bob. So they hear one of their buddies screaming, and suddenly, you know, someone wants to go help. Sam has to pull his gun on him, being like, if you leave the room, we'll all die. Things are supposed to be tense, but I unfortunately do not feel it. Then there's sounds, movement on the hull. They go into the torpedo room, following the noise, and there's something in the tubes. But what? Then they hear a tapping. And it's SOS in Morse code.
It's absurd is what it is.
They open a hatch, and then a bunch of water trickles out, and inside is Angel. This shot of Angel just peeping out of this little tube, blinking at everyone, is objectively hilarious. Like, if the goal of this was to make me laugh very hard and think he looked very silly, then everyone did their job phenomenally.
Considering none of the other jokes landed for you, I don't think that was the intent here.
This had me rolling. The silence of him just blinking at these men. I wish, like, they cut it too soon. I was like, give it longer. You'll get a laugh. That's a button. But no one listens to me. Then we cut back to Wolfram and Hart, present day. Wes enters his office to find Fred strapped to a chair. Sam pops out and knocks Wes out, and that's half of what Wes does in the episode.
Back to the flashback.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
Everyone's got their guns on Angel. How did you get down here? Angel says he needs to speak to the captain. You can't. He's dead. So he wants to speak to who's in charge. That's Sam. Angel gives some, like, coded orders in an authorization code in a pretty authoritative tone of voice.
Coded in, like, an actual code, not, like, in a racist way.
Yeah, like, Alpha, Bravo, Charlie. And then they're, like, access code, and he's like, Nautilus.
Why,
like, am I watching SEAL Team over here?
Why is the only era-appropriate thing this episode wanted to do the slurs? Do you know why?
I don't. No.
I felt very uncomfortable. I felt bad for German people all around.
It didn't feel great. Most of the episode didn't feel great. He asks for them to get rid of the metal they strapped to his ankles to get him to sink. Because he can't. He doesn't sink otherwise. Do vampires float?
Well, no, I think like the pressure of trying to swim down would just, like, it'd be impossible.
Fair enough.
Even as a vampire, like, then he probably would blow up.
That is fair. He can't just, like, as we know, you cannot zoop underwater. It all tracks over it. Then on the submarine in another room,
still in the flashback.
We go back into the flashback. Hodge, the dumb one, is saying that Angel's a super soldier, like Steve Rogers or Captain America. To which someone responds, Steve Rogers is Captain America, you eight ball.
To which I reply, shut up, Joss, you fucking nerd.
Eight ball.
Anyway, now Nazi Spike is here.
Yes. We have Nazi Spike because Angel kind of, you know, leaves and goes to be heroic and tells everyone else to stay behind. And he rounds the corner and there is Spike. Spike is in a full SS uniform and his hair is black because it's the past.
His hair is black because they made a bad choice. This is such a bad look on multiple fronts, obviously, the SS symbol. But it's like, it's not even a dye job because, as I noted to Morgan prior to filming, recording, in the final scene, you can see that James Marsters clearly got a fresh coat of peroxide. Like, his hair has been newly dyed. So what this is either shoe polish or they, like, sprayed something on his head. That's what this is. It's not a wig.
It looks quite bad. And
the bits where you can see, like, kind of, oh, God.
Sorry.
I thought you were going to puke.
I'm not there yet.
It really was like, oh, whoa, shit, she's going to barf all over the
place. I got it.
She's going full Exorcist.
What?
He's like, you can see, like, a little bit on, like,
a blonde peeking out.
Yeah, it looks awful. Also, that hair color does not favor Marsters because this man was 41, 42 here, and every bit of that is showing with this hair situation.
Yeah, it was not a good look. So Spike clarifies when asked that he's not a Nazi. He just ate one. Spike got nabbed in Madrid at a free virgin blood party that turned out to be a sting. Can you imagine? Spike was captured and woke up in a box on the ship with some other vampires. He takes us to those vampires. Their names are Nostroyev and the Prince of Lies.
Yes, so the Nostradamus riff and the Nosferatu riff.
Yeah. So
the latter, of course, Prince of Lies, played by Camden Toy, who was one of the gentlemen. He was Gnarl. He was one of the Turrican. You know, all the heavy hitters.
I do enjoy the Prince of Lies a little more than I enjoy Nostroyev.
Yeah.
Because I think a little bit more of that bit is working, largely because it's, like, physical comedy. And
yeah,
like,
I find this to be, like, another bad Shroud of Ramon riff, really, but luckily it's all quick.
Yes, it is. Nostroyev is the Scourge of Siberia. He's very full of himself, and he was Rasputin's lover. The Prince of Lies is a little Nosferatu guy. He's got a real hairy head and ears and really long nails, and he's
so, of course, Morgan
spooky.
Loves it.
So I was, you know, not having a bad time. Spike assumes that Angel is another captive, just like them. And Angel's
because, yeah,
like,
he doesn't
cool.
know about the soul. He just knows that Angel's a dick. He's a grumpy dick who, like, ditched them.
Yeah, he just knows he doesn't like him and that they have beef. So Angel is like, hey, anyone still alive on your side of the ship? Nope. They ask him, and he's like, yeah, there are some humans. And Spike's like, cool, let's eat them. And Angel has to explain to Spike, like, no, we need people who can pilot the submarine so we don't die at the bottom of the ocean. A good point. We get some comedy of Spike being like, how hard is it to drive the submarine? And this was probably my Spike joke that worked the best for me in this episode, where he's then just, like, turning knobs and pulling levers and stuff, and then makes, like, some kind of alarm go off. They were pretty solid. So Nostroyev wants to kill. He threatens Angel, and Angel kills him. He orders Spike and the Prince of Lies to not kill any humans until they reach land. And Spike says, Heil Hitler. We go to Angel's apartment. In the
We're
present,
back in the present. Thank God.
Yes, I breathe a sigh of relief. Sam Lawson
until
has shown up.
The scene that happens. Which, yeah. I'm confused in the scene why Angel doesn't have more urgency, because he knows this guy is most likely and definitely a dangerous vampire, and all of his friends are still in the building.
Yeah. Once again, Angel's very blasé in this. I guess whenever he thinks of the 40s, he's blasé.
Well, to jump ahead real quick, I'm also confused by, so Lawson shows him the setup of his friends. He's like, don't want to have a fight because something could, like, bump into it. And then eventually Angel does fight and just beats the shit out of him. And, like, the concern that apparently was supposed to be there doesn't actually exist.
Yes, and he, like, nearly throws him into the gang. And then also this scene, you know, like this, the next scene with the two of them ends with him being like, you have no idea what I have up my sleeve. You can't kill me right here. And Angel could have, it would have been easier if he had killed them right there.
It would make it. Because, he could have killed him in the scene, like, initially, where he has a stake to him, but he doesn't. It's just like, it's, if he had a bomb set up, okay, I get it now. Don't kill him.
Yeah.
Let's at least get, figure it out first. But no, this isn't a bomb.
Yeah.
Kill him immediately. You don't have to retrace history.
Yeah, you don't have to talk to this dude.
Again, the reason why he wouldn't attack him ends up not even being a reason to not attack him. He still does. He doesn't care about their well-being.
It's very odd. So there is one of my favorite present day bits in the episode where Sam's like, you don't want to know how I got in here. And Angel's like, no, it's very easy to get in here. This might as well be a bus station.
I'm surprised that security wasn't mentioned in the episode description this week.
Yeah. So Sam says he checks in with Angel every few decades. He knew about the rats in the gutter era. And he was very surprised to find him fighting evil and working at Wolfram and Hart.
He missed the whole dating a vampire slayer era then. He went from rats to this.
Yeah.
To LA.
That would be a pretty big shift. I would encourage Sam, check out some of the earlier seasons of Angel. They're pretty good, dude.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Then back on the submarine, Angel leads the crew into the control room. There's dead bodies everywhere, so all the guys are, you know, very shaky and looking around at their friends.
I just want to go back to Angel's room where penthouse where Lawson's like he says fighting evil and running Wolfram out he doesn't get how they coexist. I'm like, I kind of agree with you there, but then he goes on about how he used to live in simpler times, and I'm like, just go watch Fox News and get out of here.
Yeah, never a good sign. back on the submarine, Angel is walking everyone into the control room. The guys are all seeing their dead friends and spooked.
And this is the scene where I learned that the character O'Shea is Mikey fucking Day. And since he's obviously been in the episode, but this is the first time I'm noticing him, now we can do Fuck Watch.
Woo!
Fuck Watch.
Who are you fucking, Morgan?
I'm gonna ask Nostroyev to fuck me like I'm Rasputin. to know.
Wow.
Give me that stuff Rasputin liked. These are some of the things I'm going to say during it, you know? What about you, LaToya?
I am speechless.
Yeah, I think I really got you with that one.
My thing is, like, Lawson's obnoxious, but, like, he is hot. So, yeah. Like, if he just never spoke, maybe. But mm-hmm. also, like, Mikey Day is here. And I don't necessarily know if I want to fuck Mikey Day. But I am amused by the fact that Mikey Day is here. So, it's either a silent Lawson or maybe Mikey Day. It's just a lot of question marks here.
Look, I'm not going to say that mine is absent of question marks.
No, yours is not, apparently.
Look, you I freak think we've bitch. Both chosen well.
I don't even know if I've chosen.
But the thing is, I will not force you to choose. This is that kind of episode.
God.
Congrats.
Isn't Drew Goddard hot? Can I fuck him? I forget. Isn't he cute at least?
A little. Yeah, I think he is like a little cute.
Let's look at this. Let's objectify a writer, shall we?
Yeah.
For once. Oh yeah, he's cute.
Yeah, he's a little cutie.
Ooh. With longer hair? Okay, got it.
Yeah, I know. Longer hair.
Okay, so my answer is actually Drew Goddard.
Fair enough. I'll allow
Pillow
it.
Talk me asking what happened with these episodes with tonight.
I will stick with the...
Yeah, I know you are, you little freak. Okay, we're done with the segment.
Thank you so much. And that's Fuck Watch. So, back to the episode. Angel is like, hey, this is Spike and the Prince of Lies. You can put them to work if you want. And Sam orders the guys around. We get the submarine doing what the submarine's supposed to be doing. And Spike makes a stink about wanting to sit where the captain sits. And he does. Hodge has a moment with the Prince of Lies, who's just looking quite spooky. And Sam looks at all the dead dudes some more, and he looks fairly traumatized. So Angel, you know, seeing that and feeling guilty, is like, let's get the bodies out of here. They go to the barracks to put the bodies in the beds and cover them up. And Angel and Sam talk. Sam wants to know why they're not killing Spike and the Prince of Lies. They, you know, they're murderers who killed all of his friends. Pretty good question.
Well, yeah, Angel says Spike's not in the SS. He just likes wearing the jacket, which I wrote. Didn't tell that to the promo department.
Yeah.
But yeah, I find like the whole, like, even though I get it, you know, Spike loves to steal a jacket, especially if someone like he killed. But like, remember, this is a writer's room full of just white people. I don't think I like the joke about him just walking around with a fucking SS uniform from, like, all these white people. Like, the one person of color was Joss's assistant around this. Like, I don't care for it.
It's not great at all. The, like, only thing I have to even moderately defend it, and it's really not even how I feel, is I do think we thought like Nazis were a thing of the past at this time, or like but also there were like groups of neo-Nazis.
I don't think anything's like criticizing it though. I just think like the writers thought it'd be a funny visual is what that's what I get from this, honestly.
Yeah. And it isn't.
And of course a bunch of white guys would think that's a funny visual.
Yeah, like, you know, less skin in the game. But I don't know. It just sucks. But
yeah,
that's the one joke he gets the whole episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Austin's going on and I'm like, you can't be noble about seeing what the Germans were doing and wanting to list and then call them, I'll say it just the one time. I'm like, because they're just throwing that around all fucking episode. Everyone's saying it.
Yes. There are a lot of, you know, kind of, shitty, like, German, like, is that a slur or is it just
yes I looked it up, it's
great. Great. So he, you know, he gives this monologue about, you know, feeling very upset about seeing what the Germans were doing, and he says, evil spreading, sir, and it's not just over there, it was on my
ship over here. Black people have no rights, like, it's 1943.
I literally
you don't care about like the injustices happening on your own soil.
Yeah, I wrote like Japanese internment is happening now. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? He says, it was on my ship. It killed my men. We have to stop it. And he says he can handle dying if it's for a greater purpose. Write that new Shanshu prophecy. Mm-hmm. I guess like, that wasn't true. Mm-hmm. Was it, Sam Lawson?
But yeah, in this scene, I'm just like, Lawson's a shitty soldier with all the questioning he's mm-hmm. doing. Like, I mean, none of his fellow soldiers are any better. They sent like a bunch of flops on this mission, I have to be honest. I think a soldier who like follows every order is like something I would want, but like this guy seems like he didn't care about the military, as he said. Like it's kind of muddled. It's like, is he a good soldier or not? He's obsessed with soldier speak as a vampire. It's like, come on, grow up.
Well, it just kind of seems like he's everything and nothing. Like he is. He's such an everyman that there's just absolutely nothing to grab onto. Like he's
what if had, Steve Rogers sucked? That's this.
Yeah, he's had every perspective, so he can fill in for anyone, which I just don't find particularly compelling. But Angel says, we're fighting on the same side. Mm-hmm. You need to trust. Like, yeah. I need you to trust that I'm going to get you through this safe and sound.
Is it not that the episode is just Angel damned Captain America, basically?
Yeah.
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 And fucking it's like, nerds. Shouldn't be allowed to do anything.
Yeah, it's very dweeby. But I also just think, like, okay, you don't have a lot of time. So if he's supposed to be Captain America, he should be, like, the most schoolboy-y, sweet, you know, following every order to the letter, shining the shoes kind of a guy. So we can really see him lose that completely.
Yeah, it's just he's wishy-washy and like he doesn't have a purpose as a human. Like he doesn't we'll talk about it more when we get there, but like I don't even think it's Angel's fault the way that he is. I think it's just an amplification of the type of person he was. I think he's empty because he was empty before as a human.
Yeah.
He had hollow platitudes he thought were true and they weren't.
Yeah, and I have more to say about the turning and stuff like that and what kind of vampire he is and et cetera, like when we get there. But I don't disagree at all. We go back to Angel's apartment in the modern day. Sam is again echoing what Angel said to him. Safe and sound. Guess now's not the time to argue semantics.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking, like, you know, Angel could get up. I'm like, actually, Morianus is still post-surgery at this point. Probably is the reason why he's just sitting and chilling here.
Let the man sit. You know, he asks Angel, like, do you ever care about the mission and the men and the ship? Or is it just about saving your own ass? I just want to understand. And Angel takes his moment and tries to stake him. He said, he's like, I told you I'd fucking kill you if I ever saw you again.
And he has trouble, which he shouldn't, but whatever.
Yeah. And Sam says, you know, you don't think I'd come here without insurance, did you? His insurance is that everybody's tied up in another room.
They all have perfect balance, that they're not like stumbling. I would not have the balance in those chairs. These are like desk chairs.
Their core strength, remarkable. Mm-hmm. Core strength, balance. That's what we're doing. Like, in a way, Sam just gave them, like, a really great workout. Like, a really great low-impact workout.
They're feeling the burn.
Yeah. But I don't know if it was worth it.
So, CrossFit who?
CrossFit whomst? Then in the Wolfram and Hart lobby, Wes, Fred, and Gunn are all standing on the office chairs.
This is in Angel's office, actually. Not even the lobby. This is Angel's office.
Oh, really? Oh, they're in Angel's
office. They just go downstairs from his penthouse. Yeah.
In Angel's office, Wes,
because it's right in front of his conference table.
Oh yeah, you're right. I did not understand this. I thought that it was a bigger area because they had the fight there. But everyone's standing on the office chairs. They are gagged. They have wire wrapped around their necks. If anyone kind of even brushes up against them, according to Sam, the wire wrapped around their throats could just pop their head right off. So
yeah,
Angel,
he's like. Double wire wrapped around their necks. I'm like, and that's why Lauren can't be here, because it literally would not do anything to him. He'd still be talking. He'd be singing. And then I wrote, I don't know what double wire is, nor do I know why Angel couldn't have dusted him upstairs and then fixed this. It's not like it's a bomb.
Yes.
And then I wrote, he's wearing a mock turtleneck. I can't be intimidated by him. And then we go to a flashback. And you know who's actually wearing a mock turtleneck? Angel.
He is. Oh, the 40s were not a good time for Angel's fashion. Sam is checking in with like the guys on how the sub's working. There's no comms, but stuff's starting to move, I guess. We get a Spike and Angel moment. Spike wants a turn at the wheel. He's being a little bitch. He wants to be captain. Angel's like, go check the torpedoes, bitch. Sam and Angel get a little moment together. Angel tells Sam, like, don't worry about Spike. You know, I'm handling it. But Sam's freaked out. He wants to get the boat where it needs to go. He wants to take care of his guys. He again
then
says, like,
do that.
Yeah.
Why are they just doing that?
I don't know. He says, like, all of us knew this could be our last mission. We're all shaken up, but we will follow orders.
Will you? You ask a lot of questions.
Yeah. The Prince of Lies starts screaming. So then we run into another room. The Prince of Lies is screaming at the Nazi, and he's trying
Good.
To fuck his shit up.
Prince of Lies, I'm on your side.
Prince of Lies, right side of history. Who says he's so evil after all?
I didn't hear a damn lie from him.
Yeah. Angel gets his shit rocked, like, minorly by the Prince of Lies, which I did enjoy. Sam shoots the Prince of Lies a bunch, and it doesn't hurt him at all.
And you would think he would learn when he later points the gun at Spike, but he doesn't.
He doesn't. You know, Angel has to kill the Prince of Lies, which is a bummer to see him
kill
go.
The Nazi.
Yeah, the Nazi he does punch, at least, which is nice to see him do. The men saw Angel kill the Prince of Lies and saw him get dusted and, like, explode, and they're freaking out. Spike then grabs this paper that the Prince of Darkness was clutching and yelling about, and he says he was probably mad about this, but Spike can't read it because it's in German.
And I'm like, you know what? I appreciate that Spike, you know, has learned a lot of demon languages, but maybe learn some human languages. This seems to keep being an issue for him.
Yeah, it'd be helpful. Like, I mean, if I was like a globe-trotting scourge, I would be, you know, like, no Duolingo back then. So Spike vamps out, tries to scare the Nazi, but I write my notes like, that's not going to make him speak English. But Sam,
yeah,
luckily...
It's like how he tried to punch the demon out of a girl he thought was possessed. Yeah, this is how you exorcise someone, right? No.
No, babe.
This is how you get him to speak English, right? No.
No. Luckily, Sam can understand enough German to get by. The paper is research on vampires. He can't understand everything, but there's something about stimulation and control. It seems like they've been experimenting on vampires by cutting into their brains, and that the goal is to make a vampire army. The Nazi starts doing like a spooky laugh.
Because he's a Nazi.
And he's, and someone's talking about an evil plan, and Nazis love that. Angel gets so pissed, he starts speaking German back to the Nazi. So this is the moment where you're like, he knows
okay,
more than he's letting on.
I just zoned out. I missed that completely.
LaToya, it is very easy to miss something that's going on in this episode because it is a struggle to remain engaged with it.
You watched it twice, so that's how this happened.
It was very hard. So Spike is like, oh, Angel, I get it. You're playing both sides against each other. That's so
imbecile.
Cool.
He thinks, like, Spike's the type of person to be like, you're playing four-dimensional chess. Like, sure you are.
Okay.
Thanks, Spike.
Oh, God, Spike. Spike,
see, this
just
is when you can enjoy Spike.
Experimented on.
When Spike thinks someone playing four-dimensional chess, that's good.
Yeah. Oh, Spike. He's like, yeah, I just don't want to get experimented on. Sam goes on to say a bunch of very naive stuff about how he doesn't believe U.S. government would do that.
First, he sees the Spike's a vampire. He points his gun at him like, you just saw it doesn't work. We have our joke about how Angel refuses to be trapped at the bottom of the sea and Spike refuses to be experimented on by the government. It's funny because these things happened.
It's happened to both of them.
Yeah. That's funny. Lawson's very naive, if that's one way to put it. He doesn't think the U.S. would be down for this. My United States?
Ooh. He says, you know, you win a war by doing what's right. Again, this is where I was like, Japanese internment is happening now.
Yeah, he says, you don't win a war by doing whatever it takes. You do it by you win by doing what's right. I'm like, are you five?
Yeah. You're in a war. That's not good. You should know this.
You should, especially how this mission's going. You should know this by now.
Yeah. So, Angel, especially if he's meant to be this naive, why not make that kind of like seem to gel with his character? Angel.
Because, he was like anti-military. He thought they were all like a bunch of idiots. Mm-hmm. It's not like this is something he always wanted. It's just suddenly he noticed bad things were happening in a different country. Mm-hmm. And that's when he wanted to join the military. But it's not like it was always his like mission in life, and he's just now becoming disillusioned. Like, he just became illusioned.
How long can you be illusioned before you can become disillusioned?
Well, he's turning it on and off like a light switch.
Oh, buddy. So Angel and Spike burn the Nazi research. Spike sings God Save the King as he does this.
And he sets himself on fire, which is always funny.
Very funny. Something on the ship blows up. It's a depth charge. They run to the control room. There are three or four destroyers on their tail, and they can't take one like this.
They're just saying a bunch of submarine stuff, and I'm like, I don't know what any of this means. The sonar pinging is comforting. This was in the trailer. The pinging of the sonar, you know, the things teenage girls love to hear in their trailers for WB shows. Remember the Dawson's Creek episode where they just played the sonar pinging?
Yeah, I'm the girl who watched this at home the night it aired and said, submarine, I hope there's sonar. Like, rub my hands together. So the sonar is ping-ping-a-pinging. Everyone's peeping around. Sam's yelling. There's explosions. It's not looking good. The mother's
Everyone is
down.
Slurring about the Germans.
Everyone is saying some not-so-nice words about the Germans. And Angel orders Sam to fix what is wrong with the ship. And Sam
it's filling with water now, and that's definitely what's wrong with it.
You definitely don't want that. So, Angel and Spike are going to go, like, contain the compartments of water to try to wall things off. Sam is going to go try to fix the ship. In the engine room, Sam's working on stuff. In the other room, Angel squeezes a pipe to keep it from leaking. He says he never liked the ocean. I agree. I'm terrified of the ocean. LaToya, do you have any feelings about the ocean?
I mean, I miss the beach. I'm on the opposite side. I don't want to go to the west side. I don't want to go all the way over there.
It's miserable.
But I do kind of like the beach. I want to take Chewie and Dahlia to the beach because Dahlia has never been to a beach at all. Like, Chewie's been to Clearwater Beach, but yeah.
Oh, you should. I want to see them in the sand. See, that's nice. I like the beach. I don't like being in the ocean.
Would you ever do a cruise and then like go scuba diving?
I literally have a story about this that is like harrowing and awful about a time that I was on a boat and was taken snorkeling, and it was a nightmare.
Is your story just 47 meters down?
Yeah, I have scuba madness with my sister.
See, that's why I wouldn't do it, because 47 meters down. The movie traumatized you when you watched it alone like an idiot.
Hey, I watched, for the record, I watched 47 meters down 2 with Michael to see Claire Holt. The shark movie that I watched that traumatized me was Deep Blue Sea when I saw it on TV when I was 9 years old. It ruined my life. I was just old enough to understand that genetically engineered smart sharks would be dangerous, but young enough to be stupid enough to believe that it could be possible. It was very scary. But luckily there are no genetically engineered super sharks coming to attack this submarine, because I don't think it could take it.
Well, that's what the initiative we're working on.
Yeah. Spike goes, hey, where's the Nazi? Over in the engine room, the Nazi kills Sam by stabbing him in the guts with a screwdriver, which is admittedly not a fun way to die. Very painful and awful. Sam, as I wrote in my notes, Sam smacks the glasses off that bitch, but it's too late. He's gonna die. Then in present day, in the Wolfram and Hart lobby, Sam talks about you know, what it feels like to die like that.
Yeah. Okay. So he's monologuing and I'm like, where else is this actor in? Like, he books-ish. He is famously in Charmed, Oh My Goddess, Part 1 and 2. He's one of the elders.
He's an elder?
He's a young little elder.
He's an elder. Elders. Oh, my God. LaToya's just shown me a picture of him in those terrible Party City gold robes that elders are always wearing.
Let's see. Hold on.
Oh, with the hood up. Horrifying.
Kind of looking Brandon Routhy, though, in that one.
He does.
That's his problem. He looks like too many people.
He does.
During his monologue to Angel, like, here, right? I realized something about this character and actor that could have fixed some things, both possibly here, but also in seasons 3 and 4.
Ooh.
He should have played Connor.
Oh. You think this guy's kind of giving Connor a little more, like the vision they were going for?
Yes. I think this makes a lot of sense. And there's also later, Angel calls him son, and I'm like, ooh. This episode's also better if there's more connection between his how he feels like he failed as a father and what he did to Lawson, if that's a part of it.
Right. Yeah. Like
that. And the way Lawson is acting out, it is like there are shades of Connor in there. It's like an angry son who's upset with like he was born like fucked up, like Connor was. There's so much Connor in like what he's saying.
You're right. This is kind of touching on Connor.
It is, but it isn't, you know?
Yeah, it is, but it isn't. But it would be more, like, thematically deep and rich if it did feel like it was touching on something. Because obviously, like, thematically, the search for purpose, the search for reason in a world that is dark. That's all Angel. But
it's the line he says, like, right before, I think, the fight, which is... he's like, you gave me just enough, didn't you? Enough of your soul to keep me trapped between who I was and who I should be. I was like, first of all, okay, Reba. But also, like, that very much seems like what Connor was feeling.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, it would...
And it makes more sense than saying a vampire with a soul does this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they do talk about, I guess this is as good a time as any, the idea that Sam thinks he might have a soul or part of a soul because Angel had a soul when he turned him. And that is a big question to ask and then drop, I think. I find it to be like a question that kind of like overwhelms the episode.
It's like in Lineage when they introduced the whole cyborg clan of good guys, And to have these big concepts for an episodic, because like that makes sense in like classic episodic shows, you know, like Case of the Week or whatever, where it's like you get the big things, but it's like you're never gonna go back to it or anything like that. But when you've made a show like this serialized and it's, like, it's about the story arcs, you do expect it to be like paid off, and it's just not like any interesting concept you're having and you're not gonna follow up on it just seems like a lost opportunity.
Well, and this just also seems like a huge, like, change to the mythology and a huge, like a huge addition to the mythology that could have, like, really big impacts on the story that they're going to tell.
It's like a psychotic slayer to condense it the way they did and not talk about the ramifications and implications at all. It's that.
Yeah, I just found myself, like, really disappointed that this question wasn't, like, explored at all.
Because... the way the show is now,
for this episode,
even had the show gotten renewed, it wouldn't follow up with these concepts is the thing, because that's not what the show is intending to do. That's not what the network wanted it to do. So it's like, yeah, you would go, you do that and move on.
Yeah, I guess I wonder what the point of that is. But we go back to the past. Angel comes in to see Sam, you know, bleeding out. Sam is freaked out. He's the only one who knows how to fix this. Now, I do think this is like a tense and fraught situation that could be worth telling a story about. The person that Angel had to turn into a vampire that he regrets so much. He did it when he had a soul, etc.
I was going to say, also, sorry to interrupt you, but if he's not Connor, you do the storyline when Connor is around, because then he would see him always struggling with, is my father a monster? What your father did when he was trying to help someone, and he created a monster.
Yeah. It seems like this is all information that largely won't have an impact on anyone. Like, I know Angel and Spike have like a sad conversation at the end of this episode, but it again feels like it's not gonna matter going forward, because nothing of note was really established. And like, you know, that's not me saying like I know
it's reiterating that you need a purpose and a reason, which is what we've been, that's the show. That's what Cordelia was saying. That's like what Angel's been struggling with this season.
But I don't imagine he's going to quit Wolfram and Hart at the top of next episode. So how much can this have mattered?
Like I said, I'm happy that moving past this episode, we're like over a hump, honestly, with like, if that is the first half of the entire season. I mean, we'll have some interesting discussions, I think, moving forward. Some things that I know I liked at the time, maybe don't like anymore. Some things
I'm
that are just.
I'm excited to get into it. Mm-hmm. But so in this moment, Sam is so scared. He doesn't want to let anyone die. He's the only one who can fix this. But how can he survive to do it? And Angel says, I know you can. And he turns him into a vampire. This is a cool moral dilemma. And I wish that I cared more. But it all just feels like, I know how World War II ends. I know that Angel gains purpose. I know that this guy became a vampire who's going to try to kill Angel. And I know Spike has a soul now. Like, all of it feels a little dramatically inert. So we return to the control room. Spike is like, the air is almost gone. Like, all the guys are, like, sitting on the ground and barely breathing. He wonders if he should eat a guy who seems like he's almost dead. Angel says, no, Sam's going to come through. And suddenly everything whirs to life again. Back in the engine room, Angel goes and sees Sam, tells him good work. Sam does not seem so stoked to be undead. They surface for air. And Sam's like, why are we doing that? Like, we don't need to breathe. Suddenly he doesn't care about his guys anymore. But
he says they all look small. They look smaller.
Yeah. Which, again, is, like, interesting. There's one scene of vampire him. Sam says, they all swore to die for their country. Why shouldn't they die like this from me eating them? And Angel says, let's take a walk. In the control room, Sam looks at all his guys. This is where he says they look smaller. Angel's like, get out of the sub and swim for shore. You probably, maybe, could make it before the sun rises. He does seem to, he being Sam, still love the boat a little bit. Like, he still has this kind of, like, leftover, which, again, like, kind of made me wonder about the, like, is the soul there, is it not, etc. But he leaves out the little porthole.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying she's a good boat. This is where I put, oh, brother, the only way this would get worse if this were a Western.
And Spike is amazed by how cold that was. He's like, dang, you're still a dick. And Angel's like, yeah, I am. And then Spike's got to swim home, too. Good bit.
And I was going to say, Angel's looking good in this red light.
Then back in the present in Wolfram and Hart, Sam wants to know if the government tortured Angel for fucking everything up. And Angel's like, no, I ran away, bitch. Good for you.
He's staying underground till the end of the war. I mean, it makes sense, though, because, like, there's not like he has a daylight ring or anything.
Yeah.
He stay in submarine for something. Yeah.
It's his fucking favorite.
Lawson's like any other coward. Do you care about the military? I don't know what your thing is.
I don't get it. Yeah.
And I'm just like, this episode is like jingoistic rah-rah propaganda, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like, he was just a good American boy who wanted to serve his country because of the injustice of the world. Then the injustice destroyed him. Not the military, who was responsible for the shit show. But injustice.
Vampires. Yeah, it's just all a little muddled.
The bad guys did this. Not the military that he served.
Mm-hmm. So he says, you know, maybe it's not so bad. You know, one person damned to make the world safe for future generations. You know, they got the U.S. government got important shit from that sub. But Sam is excited to hurt Angel. He says maybe it'll help him feel better. He explains that in his early vampire years, he embraced the joy of destruction and death after he turned. But the whole time he felt nothing. He said 60 years of blood drying in my throat like ashes. What do you think? Is it me, Chief? Or does everyone you sire feel this way? And I'm like, again, just feels like you didn't. This is a new idea.
I think it's him, honestly.
Yeah, so I think it's you, dude. I think you just are a bummer. Yeah, can we both agree this isn't mythology? This is just one dude sucking.
You are wishy-washy as a human. You're wishy-washy as a dead guy. Sorry.
Sorry. Rip to Sam Lawson. He would have loved Gilly. Angel is the only person who he ever did this to after he had a soul. And Sam, you know, has this hopeful moment that maybe he has a soul. And Angel says, I don't think it works like that, son. And again, like, this is an attempt at something bittersweet and emotional, but it's just not hitting for me. They start fighting.
Yeah, I just think he was a dude trying to fill a void with the military and it failed. Mm-hmm. And now he's a vampire who still has a void.
Yeah. So Sam is convinced that Angel gave him, you know, like you said, enough of his soul to trap him between who he was and who he was supposed to be. He says, I'm nothing.
He's a survivor.
Angel throws him through the windows and into the lobby and is about
fighting
to stake
without
him.
Any caution for his friend. So he could have staked him immediately.
Yeah, wild. And as he's about to stake him, Sam eggs him on. Come on, Chief. Give me a mission. And I'm like, they were together for like a day. Like,
that line sucks. All of the using the military terms in like normal conversation, just every time I'm like, stop this. Also, he says, I'm nothing because of you. Again, Connor motivation.
Yes. So Angel kills him. I write down that I don't know what he's feeling or what I'm supposed to be feeling. Then we get
what he's feeling is not concerned for his friends, because we don't see him going to rush to save them. And the only person he interacts with after this is Spike.
Cool. sounds right for season 5. It's just, it's really odd that he doesn't save them.
I suppose he saved him. I suppose he saved them.
It would be very funny if in the back of the Angel and Spike conversation, you could see them all still standing on the chairs going like,
So Angel snapped.
Angel went
off. Lawson finally broke Angel.
Sounds right. So then in this final scene, Spike comes in.
Fresh coat of peroxide.
The hair is blinding. Spike sees the broken window and says, really got to do something about security.
Yeah, Fred Angel, gave him the cliff notes because they're still friends off screen.
We swear they're friends. Angel is looking out the windows, kind of basking in the sun a little bit, but in a sad way. Spike says,
What was Spike up to, really?
Like, no clue why he was here.
No, like, but like, really, like, what was he up to this episode? Because he has to be possibly processing the whole, like,
Lindsay
Doyle, like, Doyle bamboozlement.
Yeah. I don't, maybe he came here to talk it out. Spike says, you know, Sailor Boy, it took him long enough. And he asks, what do you think he was looking for? And Angel says, a reason. And
yeah, I do think this is a beautiful final shot. Like,
yeah, of the two of them, like, bathed in the sun, like, silhouetted from the back. It's really nice. And
even that review I had been reading, which I didn't agree with everything, was just like, you know, I love Spike, but he's really unnecessary to the flashbacks. And we've had a bunch of just like these Angel and Spike, like, heart to hearts. When we have, you know, other cast members, even they're saying that, I'm like, okay, I'm not going wild. Like, this is happening.
No, it just, it feels so bizarre that he wouldn't talk that he is not talking to any of the people who care about him, or that none of the people who care about him are seeking him out. Or that this show seems wholly uninterested in three of its, like, big, great ensemble members. It bums me out. I missed my friends this week. But now this is the app. Angel has had, you know, a weird night. Is there anything that you would recommend he pop on the old WB?
Angel is a vampire. Does he even like TV?
I think he'll like the WB.
They get that hot teen drama to ease the pain and trauma. And here's the episode that he needs to see.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, after this particular episode, I think, based on everything I've said, it's clear what I'm going to suggest. Let's say it together. 1, 2, 3. UPN's Jake 2.0.
What now?
You don't know about Jake 2.0, Morgan?
Not familiar with Jake 2.0.
Okay, so no, it's not NBC's Chuck, but the other one that came first and is executive produced by David Greenwalt. Heard of him?
Yes.
So the series revolves around a computer expert, Jake Foley, Christopher Gorham, who works for the U.S. government's NSA and was accidentally infected by nanobots, which give him superhuman powers. He can control technology with his brain, making him the ultimate human upgrade. That's Jake 2.0.
Wow. Real, like, Kyle XY energy in terms of that title. Woof.
But really, wow, it's Chuck before Chuck.
Chuck before Chuck. I would love to watch some Jake 2.0. I think Christopher Gorham is a very beautiful man.
Yeah, so do I. I was distracted by this episode because I'm like, he's not Christopher Gorham.
Wish he was.
For really, like an amalgamation of just attractive men. Yeah. Watson Lawson.
Phenomenal.
But yeah, because I was really just thinking, like, any, like, really military-centric, you know, episodes or, like, WB programs. And there was something called The Army Show, like a sitcom on WB, but, like, no. Mm-hmm. No.
Fair enough.
And then I've done CW shows, so technically I'm allowed to do UPN as well.
Mm-hmm. I'll allow it.
And to remind everyone, what I didn't have UPN, so I had to watch my WB affiliate played UPN shows, actually. So that's how I was able to watch Buffy Season 6 and Season 7.
Yeah, that's so wild. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Angel, I hope that Jake 2.0 cures what ails you.
Yeah. Nanobots. Angel is not going to be able to wrap his head around whatever nanobots are. That's for sure.
He'll hate that. He will be so confounded by it.
He gets obsessed with the show and tries to explain it to everyone. And it's like, Angel, you don't get the show. I really don't think you get it.
Let me go back. Nanobots are like robots.
But he's like explaining it to Fred, and she's like, I know what nanobots are. You clearly don't.
Yeah. I'm just glad you're talking to me again, Angel.
Oh, that was an accident. Bye.
Bye. God, we're so good at doing our versions of these scenes. It's like you're watching the show.
It's all the scenes that were happening during the flashbacks.
Yeah. Good gravy. Well, this wasn't our fave, but I am hoping that next week, which I know to be a fan favorite, will be fun for the two of us.
And it's official. We will be having a guest on the episode.
Yay!
Co-showrunner of the series Lucifer, Joe Henderson, will be joining us for Smile Time.
Woo! That'll be so fun!
Yes.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Well, so come back in 2 weeks for that. If you would like to follow us on socials, we are at Angel on Top Cast on both Twitter and Instagram. You can go to angelontop.com to be led to our Patreon. That's where we do live watches. That's where we release our bonus pod, the Cole Turner cast. It's about Cole Turner, who's the main character of Charmed.
If you're tired of us dissecting every single thing in Angel Season 5, listen to Cole Turner cast because head's empty, baby.
Head is empty and we are in a great mood.
Yeah, we are.
It is the opposite. If you would like to follow me on social media, you can do so at Lorgan Mudich on whatever platform interests you. Latoya, where can the people find you and should they? Yeah, the internet's rough these days. Well, that has been our app. And until next time. you are now leaving Wolfram and Hart. And no, we don't validate.
Have you ever watched a futuristic sci-fi movie and wondered, but wait, could any of this really happen? And will I live long enough to see it? That's what our show Hypothetical is about. I'm Carrie Bechet, and on this podcast, we ask what-if questions about the future. Like, what if we could read minds? What if the world's digital data was erased all at once? What would happen if the Yellowstone supervolcano erupted? Then we explore that question two ways, through speculative science fiction and through dialogue with brilliant scientists. The result is a genre-bending narrative that's interwoven with real facts provided by literal geniuses. And spoiler alert, a lot of the science fiction out there, it's not nearly as far-fetched as you might think. Come time travel with me into the future on Hypothetical. New episodes on Tuesdays, available on all your favorite podcast apps. Just search Hypothetical. That's HYPERTHETICAL.